Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, welcome to a special edition of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. This is me, your host, Vanch, and today joining me, we have a special guest, someone who's not been on this podcast before, and his name is Miles David. Miles is quite the tennis content creator on YouTube, as well as Twitter, and as well as he's got a podcast. It's called Tuned Into Tennis, so you should definitely check that out. And Miles is here with me to preview the 2023 Australian Open Women's Singles Draw. So I'm really excited to have him here. Miles, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on. I have been listening to the Tennis and Bagels podcast for a while now, and I'm a fan of your work. I'm a fan of your like excellent statistical knowledge about tennis, especially from what I see on Twitter. I've always been like just enamored with that. So I appreciate you having me on, and I'm excited to talk about the Australian Open. I think it's my second favorite slam. So I'm always excited when it comes around.
Yeah, I appreciate those kind words. I really look forward to the Australian Open every year, just because I feel like, you know, a lot of the players are coming fresh, usually off of a short offseason that we have in tennis. Obviously, some niggling injuries, and you never quite know what to expect. But at the same time, I do find that it's quite less upset prone, and the seeds tend to do quite well here. Just generally speaking, if you look at, you know, quarterfinals onwards from previous years, it seems like most of the top seeds usually live up to the billing. Obviously, you have a few names here or there that really do surprise. But in general, I think this women's draw, there's quite a lot to like here.
Yeah, I'm pretty I'm from the era of Australian Open women's draws where Serena Williams wins every odd year. So there haven't been too many surprised women champions. There have been a couple more that have seeped in on the men's side, but the women's side, if it's not necessarily somebody you thought was going to win, it's somebody who's been like around and in the conversation to do so. So I'm excited to see what happens in that regard this year.
Great. Yeah. I guess right away, if we sort of just go quarter by quarter and we look at the Iga Świątek quarter, Świątek obviously won two majors last year, went on a 37 match winning streak. Is going to be the clear favorite no matter what after everything she accomplished last year. However, this is quite a tricky section. Right away, opening with Julia Neymeyer, what were your thoughts when you sort of looked at her 16th or 8th of the draw? Quite deep, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting section for a number one seed to be kind of surrounded by players who on paper kind of give me dangerous or yield or exclamation point vibes when I see their name. Although I do caution myself, just because even when I've had times like that, and even in early 2022 that I thought, oh, Świątek might be in trouble, she kind of made a fool out of me. So the names that pop out obviously is the first round, Jewel Niemeyer, just because they had a pretty hard contested match in the third or fourth round of the US Open.
Correct. Fourth round. I believe Niemeyer was up a set and a break. And
yeah.
Yeah.
She put in some hard work in that match, and then she also got to the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. So she's one of those players that kind of, you know, was stung the most from not having points at Wimbledon 2022. So maybe she's not necessarily playing at her correct seeding or ranking, I should say. But it's something to keep an eye on. I'm not necessarily sure I put Świątek on the upset alert kind of window, but interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if he drops a set. I'll say that.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. I think it's a challenging start, obviously, against a, you know, a big hitter on a fast hard court like this. I hear it's playing, you know, sort of medium to fast. They're using those, you know, Dunlop balls that they've been using throughout the whole season. And those are, you know, pretty light, and they you can generally hit through the court pretty well with them. But it's going to be interesting to see how Swiatek looks kind of early on, especially after Jessica Pegula, you know, beat her for the first time last week quite handily. But if we just look at her section, I mean, she's got Osorio most likely next. And then you got, you know, Andreescu and Buzkova. You know, are there any sort of first round matches that really stand out to you apart from Niemeyer and Swiatek? For me, obviously, I have circled Andreescu and Buzkova.
So I'm looking further down in that same section of the draw that she's in that could possibly be somebody to meet her in the fourth round, and that could be 22 seed and Wimbledon champion Rybakina. And then also there's some couple of other names that just I want to throw out there. There's the highest seed in that bottom section that is, if seeds hold, that would be the fourth round matchup. Danielle Collins, who beat her in the semifinals last year pretty soundly, especially in that second set. And then there's also somebody that I didn't like notice was in that section until I took a really good glance just right now is I believe her first name is Carolina Mukova. Yeah, I haven't seen her name in like big tournament draws yet, or recently I should say, but I believe she's made a quarterfinal here before in 2021.
Yeah, that's right. No, she made it even further, semis actually.
Semifinal,
And
yeah.
she beat Ash Barty, and she had that you know, abdominal injury. She left the court, and Ash Barty really kind of was overcome by nerves in that match. And then, you know, she played that spectacular. I mean, it was a really good semifinal between her and Jennifer Brady. And so I'd really love to see those two, you know, come back and contend for these big titles again, because Mukova, I mean, she's such a crafty player. The way she constructs those points, the variety that she has, the slice backhand, just very smooth watch overall. I just, you know, I she just hasn't been able to sustain a good amount of momentum and stay fit and play several tournaments in a row, but she's really fun to watch. And I remember last year she was getting on quite a roll. She beat Sakkari at the French Open, had a good win over Leila Fernandez in Miami, and you thought, okay, she's starting to pick up momentum. But then the next round after the Sakkari upset, she got injured again and had to pull out against or retire in the middle of the match against Anisimova, I believe it was. So, but I really would love to see her. I mean, she's got, I think, a reasonably winnable first round, and then she probably has to
Yeah.
play Danielle Collins,
Sign me up for that. Yeah. Sign me up for Mukova and Danielle Collins. I think I'd like to watch that. If I was on the grounds, that seems like it would be, no disrespect to the players, but that seems like it might be a outside court match. So
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely would try to be as close as I could to the court for that one.
Yeah, I'd definitely go there and see that. But, you know, is there anyone you see potentially, like, you know, getting to the fourth round? Do you still, I mean, I still have Iga getting to the fourth round in this
Yeah,
section.
I think it'll be good. I think it's good for women's tennis if she can kind of fight through that early round battle. And then maybe if she gets to, if I, maybe I should put it the other way around, if Andreescu gets to Swiatek, because she is the unseeded player, I'd like to see that. I mean, those are two young guns. I think both of them are both under 22 years old, both have Grand Slams. I'd like to see that. I just don't see anybody really truly knocking her off her way, especially on a hard court that she's had success on just last year. I'm kind of hoping to see a rematch of the semifinal in the fourth round between Collins and Swiatek.
Yeah, for sure. And even the third round rematch between her and Rybakina. Believe they already played this year, and Rybakina won that in three sets. That's
Yeah, they
going to be
have.
interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. I definitely want to see that Swiatek Collins fourth round rematch, especially after last year. But looking further down the section, I mean, her potential quarterfinal is Coco Gauff. And obviously, Swiatek, you know, has owned that head to head recently, 5-0. And Gauff doesn't seem to be getting any closer, obviously. I mean, it's just a really bad matchup for her, just in general, with the absorbing the pace on the forehand wing, especially, and just really, yeah, just troublesome for her. And in that regards, I think Iga is a little bit relieved that it's not Arina Sabalenka or, you know, some of the other big hitters. Like, I guess she wouldn't play Garcia in the quarters, but you know, for Gauff here, I think it's a tricky first round against Siniaková. That's not someone you want to face early on, for sure.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a popcorn match just because my eyes aren't drawn to it when I see the draw. But when I look a little deeper into it, I realize that I've seen them play before relatively recently at the Billie Jean King Cup, and Siniaková actually got that win, especially pretty comfortable in the second set. So I think that Coco should actually come out pretty sharp because she has motivation to win that match. Like the last time they played, she lost. She has extra motivation. And then beyond that first round match, there's a possibility that she could face Raducanu. Raducanu might not make it that far based off of some current health issues with her ankle. And even if she does make it to that second round match and it's a Raducanu versus Goff matchup, I still give the edge to Goff just because I feel like she has more form and confidence at the moment. So,
yeah, I would definitely agree. I think based on form, I mean, obviously she's won that title. And in that title, she had to face, you know, she faced actually a pretty stern test in Sophia Kennan, who's coming back and playing some really good tennis. And a lot of people were saying, oh, that's such a soft draw. You know, she lost 22 games and all that. But I'm like, no. I mean, she was pushed against Kennan, and that could have gone either way. So, and yeah, you know, on the Siniakova match, I think she's 3-1 in that head-to-head. But the last one, Billie Jean King Cup, end of the season, you know, really tired, you know, successful season for her. So I kind of throw that a little bit out of the window, but it's good to see. It would be really nice to see her play Raducanu, and obviously you have Zhang in that sense, you know, in that section or that 32nd of that draw. So I would love to see a potential Zhang against either Goff or Raducanu. But
they had a pretty good match at the U.S. Open, Zhang and Goff. I want to say it was the third or fourth round, maybe possibly fourth.
Wait,
round.
No. This is Shin Win.
Not Zheng Shuai. Okay, now actually, yeah. I would like to see that as well too, because both of them are what, sub 21 possibly.
Right.
I mean, I think that bodes well for women's tennis. And she has a really big game, so yeah, I would definitely sign up to watch Qinwen Zheng and Coco in that third round. But just above Qinwen, like in that upper section, that could be a fourth round opponent for Goff. Like we talked about it briefly before we hopped on the pod, but Badosa pulling out with that injury definitely opens up some opportunity. The next highest seed in that little section is 17 seed Ostapenko, who plays Yastremska first round. The winner of that matchup, I mean, I'm sure tennis players try not to look too far at draws, but if you're checking the draw post Badosa's retirement, withdrawal, I should say, that matchup now looks way more important because both of those have Ostapenko more so than Yastremska, but both of them have experience going deep in majors, whereas the rest of those names in that draw don't really. So interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And then you also have I think Katie McNally. I mean, she was supposed to play Badosa, and now she, it looks like she could maybe get to the third round. I mean, if she plays well, it's looks like it could be a good opportunity for someone there to break through. I mean, Ostapenko is probably the favorite on paper to get out of that section.
But you really never know with Ostapenko.
But you just never know. I was just going to say, it's like, I mean, the difference between her peak and her average level, it's quite, there's quite a variance there, let's just say. So,
yeah.
But I mean, who do you have in the quarterfinals, I guess, if we just look at the Goff and Swiatek section? Are you going for anyone different?
No, I mean, I think I try my best not to play it safe, but I do think I'll go with the seeds holding in Swiatek and Goff meeting in that quarterfinal, just because I want to see, even if I'm a huge Coco fan, but even if she loses that matchup, I want to see like where her form, confidence, and progression of what she worked on in off scene has actually gotten her. And there's no better test and litmus test than playing the number one player in the world. So I kind of want to see what she feels like going up against Swiatek, even if the head-to-head isn't favoring her at all, you know?
Yeah, interesting. I also just can't really trust anyone else really in this section, so I'm going to go with the seeds as well. No disagreement from me there so far. But I guess if we go down and we look at the bottom half of the, the bottom quarter of the first half, I guess, with the Pegula section in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, Pegula is coming in with such great form, right? I mean, having gone 4-1 at the United Cup, you know, playing such an instrumental role in helping the U.S. win in the inaugural edition. And I look at her draw, and it's like, it's a pretty reasonably good one. I mean, she does have potentially Anisimova, who had a very good tournament last year, a pretty good year in general when she was healthy. And then you also have names like Krejcikova and always dangerous Petra Kvitova. And so, you know, I would, this is going to be a really good test for Pegula, because for the first time, I really feel like eyes are on her, and she has that sort of expectation of getting to the semifinals of this tournament at least, and potentially playing Swiatek again. So I'm curious to see how she sort of handles that mentally. She's usually very sort of buttoned up and pretty pretty sure of herself and confident, and, you know, goes on and does her job professionally. So I'm curious to see, especially, I mean, Brenda Fubertova, I mean, what a story that was, qualifying.
So dramatic. You know, every single match.
And all three of her matches, I feel, yes, like made these insane comebacks. I mean, she was down and out and 15 years of age. It's impressive to see her there for sure.
And also another qualifier is, I don't remember her first name, so I'm just going to use, well, you know what? The beauty of the internet. I should probably click on it. Yep, Polina. I would have guessed correctly. Polina Kudermetova, the younger sister, yep, of top 10 player Veronika Kudermetova. This is her first Grand Slam, first time in qualifying, and she made it through. So, I mean, there has to be some level of confidence that you feel from kind of knocking off those achievements off your resume. So I wouldn't be surprised if she puts up a fight and gets to the third round. That'd be a good story, especially like another sister story on the WTA tour. But actually, when it comes to Pegula, I think she's a wonderful player. She does very, very, very little wrong on the tennis court. But just off the heels of the US Open, when I kind of thought that she would be the person lifting the trophy, I felt like she was calm enough to kind of weather the New York storm, if you will. But Swiatek undersold herself before that tournament started and said she didn't like the ball. So I didn't really think that Swiatek would win. I thought Pegula would. So this go around, I'm being a little bit more cautious. And I know she had like the great performance at the United Cup against Swiatek. And I know she's performed well here before, but I see some other names in that section that'll not maybe stop her from getting to the fourth round, but definitely stop her from getting into the quarters.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make there. I mean, obviously you have, what, five qualifiers in this section? I mean, I gotta think that's the most qualifiers in any section.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, that's crazy.
And then you also have a wild card in there, Gadecki, and she's being mentored by Ash Barty, actually. So this is that.
Oh wow,
that is a first round match I hadn't had circled before, but now that I'm looking at it, that'll be pretty interesting. Kudermetova's sister against, you know, someone being mentored by, I mean, Olivia Gadecki. I've definitely heard of her and seen her name in draws, but I don't know too much about her.
Me either. I have to look that up now because now I'm interested to see what her game looks like if Ash Barty got her attention.
Yeah, and then of course the other thing that stands out in this section is, my goodness, the Czechs are coming, right? I mean, you have you also have Krejcikova playing against Belgic. I forgive me if I pronounced that incorrectly, but you know, she played this match against Alicia Parks, I think, in qualies, and Parks, you know, had such a good finish to last year and really kind of halved her ranking at the end. And it just,
and should have been qualified. I mean, quote unquote, should have been main draw based off of those results, but the cutoff just didn't work in her favor.
Yeah, that was unfortunate for her. And I think she just didn't play a good match in that qualies match. I think she had some amazing like 35 winners, but then hit like 70 on forced errors, and it was a bummer. But I think she's got the tools, and I still believe in Parks to do some really big things this year. But you know, just looking at it, I think the main contenders that Pegula definitely has to worry about, I would say three are like Anisimova, Kvitova, and Krejcikova. Those are the three that sort of stand out to me, because if any of those three players are playing, you know, at their peak sustained tennis for a long time, especially, I mean, if Kvitova just comes out there and just blasts winners on set points down and just, you know, plays redlining tennis and just shows absolutely no fear, it's like, there's not
much who can stop that, yeah,
they do about it. So it's And same with Krejcikova as well, the form that she had at the end of last year. I don't think she's looked too great in these tune-ups, but I don't think that matters. I think she's got enough matches in, and she's such a, you know, instinctual player as it is, and so complete that she could always show up at any point in time.
Krejcikova is actually the name that I'm looking at to make it through this section. Something about it, I might be completely off base, but something about her name is giving me good energy, because she's in a section that's benefited the most from qualifiers and wildcards. So she has on paper the best ability to kind of work her way through the draw and then face somebody like a Kvitova. And I love Kvitova. I modeled some of my personal tennis playing around her. She's a lefty. She hits big and kind of doesn't worry too much about the errors and plays aggressive, but it's hard to trust her. You know, Kvitova is one of those players I root for, like the closer they get to the title, but in the beginning I'm kind of like, well, let's just see what she does. So I'm hoping that the two do meet up, but I'm leaning towards Krejcikova making out of this section. And she's also a defending quarterfinalist, so she also feels comfortable in Australia on those courts, so it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Krejcikova is a really good pick to get out. I'm just hesitating a little bit on her just because, I still have faith in her, but I just wonder, like, is she ready? Is something, is she going to have that consistent level? Like, just kind of with Andreescu as well, it's like, I have no doubt that they'll get there with enough matches and enough reps, but I just don't know if they're ready, like, quite yet. So I kind of hesitate a little bit, but I definitely see where you're coming from. Like, Krejcikova making the quarters would not shock me in the slightest. And maybe in the semis, if we could get a potential rematch with her and Świątek, that would be wonderful. I mean, especially after the Ostrava final, one of the
That
matches
was a
of
really good match. Yeah. Really, really good match.
the year. But yeah, I'm going to be boring again. I'm going to have to go with Pegula again. I'm just being boring today. I'm
Nah,
not
she's
feeling well.
playing well. There's nothing boring in that. She's definitely playing well and is playing like a number three player in the world for sure.
Yeah, and then of course we have the section below, and the section below, the thing that stands out is obviously you have Kenin and Azarenka against each other, the only two females in this entire quarter who are previous Australian Open winners, and they have to go up against each other. It's
I think they're the only two winners in the entire women's singles draw, actually. And
correct,
of course
correct, yeah.
they just go head to head in the first round. But Kenin, hot take, is actually who I've been circling as somebody to make a really good resurgence this year. I definitely see her, maybe I shouldn't say definitely, but I have a feeling that she's going to get at least back to the top 50 in the world by the end of the year, if not better than that. I think she has very few points to defend almost anywhere. And I think she's won as many matches this year as she won in the totality of 2022. So she's
Yeah.
definitely improving. And I know I kind of get a good vibe that she's going to show up ready to fight against Azarenka, but their head to head is interesting because I want to say the last time they played in Rome of 2020, which was in the pandemic year and not in its normal slot, she got double bageled by Azarenka, but that was on clay. So,
And then she went and made the French Open final.
right.
So that was actually quite something, and I think she made the semifinals of Hobart, which is her first semifinal, the first one since 2020 Roland Garros. So it's been
Crazy. That's crazy.
that is ridiculous to think about. But I mean, she's only 23. Like, it's not,
Right.
or I guess 24 now. But that's,
She's
24.
young.
But it's, well, I mean, she's already won a slam and made another slam finals. Not many other players who can say that. So, but I also circle Madison Keys here because she tends to do really well
Same.
in Australia. Like, I mean, I remember when she pushed Serena in 2015, I think it was, and then obviously last year she had that great run to the semis before Ash Barty really kind of took her apart. But that's going to be interesting. And obviously she went 5-0 at the United Cup. Didn't always face the sternest of tests, but usually passed them with flying colors most of the time. So I look at her, and then I look at some other players in this. I mean, Sakkari as well, but I wonder if she's sort of conquered some of her demons. But I'm really just kind of not seeing her getting past the fourth round for some reason. I just don't have much faith in her.
I'd love to see her conquer some of the demons. And like a lot of people know me as a Sakkari fan, just because I'm intrigued by how much she lets us into what is she struggling with, like with the pressure and being a top elite player. But I have to admit, I see Keys getting out of this section pretty comfortably, just because like on paper, she shouldn't have too many problems getting to at least the third round. And then once you have kind of felt that groove, she's a groove player. So, I mean, the sky's the limit. I know she hasn't reached her potential all the way and like gotten a Grand Slam championship under her belt, but I have a good feeling. I have a good feeling about it. Something about the camaraderie she probably felt at the United Cup mixed with, being back in the top 10. Because of those results, she snuck into the top 10, got the number 10 seed here. So, I think she's feeling good.
Yeah, I totally feel the same way as well. Like, it's strange for me to say this, but she's definitely the most reliable in this. It feels like that. I mean, at least based on everything you said, and also just the kind of, because when she's feeling well, and she's sort of one of those confident players, confidence-based players, that when she gets, like, yeah, I mean, when she's 5, 6 matches in a row, the deeper she goes in the draw, at least before the final, the more dangerous I feel like she gets, unless she has a real foil like a Barty or a Serena or someone. It really takes someone of that caliber, or like a Sloane Stephens, a red hot one at the US Open when they played. But yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Keys and Pegula as well, and I think I have Pegula coming out of that match and facing Świątek if we just look at that top half.
I'm going Keys Krejcikova. Going with the K's.
All right. Yeah, I like it. I like it. It's exactly the contrast we need, to be honest. So, but yeah, I guess we should go to the bottom half. And obviously that kicks off with Kazakina's quarter, the number 8 seed. And obviously her potential round of 16 is Kudermetova as well. I actually really like this draw for Kudermetova. I mean, quietly, she's been winning a lot, getting a lot of ranking points, just, you know, usually benefited by a withdrawal here or there in most tournaments.
Speaking of withdrawal, have they played, now that we're like having this conversation, have they played the final of the Adelaide WTA 500 yet? Because I know the semifinals were a complete bust with withdrawals.
I think that Bencic Kazakina match is probably about to start actually any minute.
Oh, okay, cool.
But yeah, so I'll definitely have my eye on that as well. Bencic is someone else who just wins so many 500s and does so well on the tour, but just, you know, hasn't done well in this majors outside of Wimbledon. It's really quite something, actually. But and still, she feels like she's been around forever, but she's only 25.
So. I know, right?
Yeah,
she has a win over Serena in 2015, which is almost 10 years ago. Like, that's crazy. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I look at this section, and I'm like, you know, this is a good draw, like for someone like, yeah, I mean, Kudermetova, I like her chances to get out of this, especially given, yeah, like just her first two rounds seem quite winnable, and then she's got Zhang, who can be somewhat tricky, and you have to play a certain level, Golubic as well, but I definitely think if she's healthy, she probably gets out of there. There's a few, I think this is maybe the least interesting section, to be honest. Section
definitely
five.
Definitely getting those vibes. If it's not Kudermetova that makes it through this entire section, something about Kasatkina in Grand Slams feels a little, not that she hasn't proven herself that she can go deep into one, but I kind of have to see it to believe it. One of those things. I don't really write it on paper.
Yeah, and it does kind of worry me that she's playing the final this week. I say that because I remember
she's done that before. Yeah.
The US Open, she won in Cleveland, I want to say, and she won that title, and then she lost to Harriet Dart in the first round. I mean,
yep.
That was tricky. She was like one of the first few seeds to go out.
Head scratcher.
But yeah, like I guess we'll move on to a more interesting section.
But before we move on, the name Petra Martic is right there looking at me, and somehow she always finds her way into her part of the draw where she can make some noise, and you're like, this makes total sense why she has been as high as, like, what, top 25? You know, she's typically a player that's seeded anywhere between 25 and 32, and she's unfortunately not seeded here, but, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if she kind of finagles her way into the later round of the tournament. This is kind of what she does.
She is quite tricky, man, with that backhand slice and just, you know, can pull the trigger on the forehand down the line. And she like, when she gets it going, I mean, I remember, like, watching her at the French Open in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I think last year at the US Open, she really took apart Paula Badosa. And I was just like, okay.
I was at that match. Yeah, that was court 17, I believe.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Forgot about that one.
Yeah, the other interesting section, I mean, this is far more interesting for me. Fernandez and Cornet and Garcia in that one section. I mean, my goodness. And you also have, players like Townsend. Good to see her back, you know, playing. And looks like she can actually win some doubles majors, which is great. She's won two doubles titles this year. So
back to back, you know?
Yeah, that's a fun one with Diane Perry as well. One-handed backhand. But just had to throw that in there.
It's a beautiful backhand. Like, I really like it. Really is. She upset Krejcikova in the first round of the 2022 French Open, and she just has a very elegant, you know, aesthetically pleasing type game.
Yeah, for sure. And then you know, I look at someone like Linette. I think this is a good opportunity for her. Kontaveit hasn't been playing her best tennis, and you know, Linette with the vibes from Team Poland and the United Tub competition, and just in general, she can be, you know, a dangerous player. You know, I remember she beat Jabeur last year at the French Open, and she can generally play on most surfaces. I love her backhand, and you know, I think she could actually do some damage with this draw that she's got. I think that Garcia section with Fernandez, I mean, that's a tricky first round for Leila Cornet. I mean, talk about someone who has just made a career on upsets in the first few rounds of majors, particularly last season. So, I mean, that was just almost every major she had these scalps.
Yeah, she's known for digging in and kind of causing an upset, even if there's not really much one like there, because Fernandez isn't seeded either and hasn't been playing wonderful in the past 6 months. But I mean, partly due to injury, but interested to see how that one goes. I'm sure it'll be a long one with some interesting rallies and using all parts of the court. But I do have to say, on paper, this looks like a pretty grand opportunity for Garcia to kind of really step into her potential, the potential that Andy Murray set forth for her. Yeah. The draw does not look bad. I mean, I know we just talked about Fernandez and Cornet, and she would meet the winner of that match in the second round. But beyond that, I mean, you got Arena Camilia Begu, which would be the highest seed she could face in the third round. And she's been playing relatively well. I believe she made a semifinal in one of these lead up tournaments before the Australian. And then Contavit would be a potential fourth round, but she might not even make it that far. So I want to see Garcia get out of this section just to confirm that I'm not crazy for thinking that she has a second chance to kind of affirm herself as everything that people have seen her to be, which, I mean, people have called her to be a Grand Slam champion, and I think she can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt her game is there. I mean, it's just, you know, and she has put together a really consistent stretch now. I mean, if we go all the way back to when she won the French Open doubles last year, I mean, you look at her winning Bad Homburg, qualifying and winning Cincinnati. That right there was so impressive because that was seven match wins in a row. But really, only bad match that she's played in that stretch really significantly was the Jabeur match in the U.S. Open semis. She really just didn't show up for that one. But I definitely think if she's in that position again, I like her a lot now because having won the WTA finals, having tasted glory at the second highest level, you know, and being four in the world, it feels like different from 5 years ago when she actually just got there based on a few good results at the end of the year. This feels like she's found her replicable winning formula. She's now committed to taking those returns early coming in, and this is her style. There's no wavering from it now. And I think you just have to be super confident when you're playing that kind of game, because if you're even just a little bit off, it can be ugly. But when she's connecting, and my goodness, some of the serves, obviously, I think she was the tour leader last year in aces. The stats bear out. And yeah, had one of the best first serve percentages, and and that's across all surfaces. So I'd love to see her get out of this section. And she's been pretty reliable, really. I mean, I think this week she lost to Bencic, but I wasn't too concerned. That was a, you know, very
that's not a bad loss necessarily. Yeah, and could have gone either way.
And that's probably going to be beneficial anyway, because that gives her some more rest and time and get used to the Melbourne conditions. So
I think confidence plays a big role into like why she's been in this stretch. But I think if she really wants to capitalize on the stretch, she just has to focus on being as clear as possible. And I think her kind of committing to one play style, which is aggressive, get to the net, take everything early as much as I can, and utilize my serve. Yep. If she has like a very clear game plan with the draw that she has, I can see her going far. If she just believes in it, you know, it'll happen for her.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I really just don't want to go with all these seeds. Like, this is not the WTA I know, you know?
I know, right? The WTA will definitely make a fool out of you as soon as the first match is, like, live. Like, but wait, I didn't even see that.
I really want the seeds to do well, because I think it'll just, I mean, imagine if we have the ATP just all unseeded players, and then we have some, it's just going to be quite the flip. So, I would love to see how tennis Twitter reacts to that as well. So, but I am really tempted to pick Garcia to get out of this section. And I think I'll go with Kudermetova. Something about Kazakina is like just not really.
Understood.
I mean, she did make the French Open semis last year, but
that's more her playground than I think hardcore. Now, she's not a bad hardcore player, but I think her style of game, the clay rewards it tenfold more than the hardcores do.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, you do also have like Pliskova, Kristea. I don't feel too great about Pliskova right now.
Not at all.
Particularly the first half of this season, she's not been great. So it's usually the second half when she tends to find some form and really pick up some wins. But
for a player that's been kind of famous for not having emotion, she seems even more emotionless out there, which is kind of crazy. Like, she just, I think she goes on the court and realizes that, like, in order for her to get her best out of her game, she has to kind of be more centered. But even like, even that looks a little weary these days. See, I'm not sure what she's doing out there. I'm really not.
Yeah. I just watch her play. I'm like, move those feet, man. Just move those feet. Like,
it's like her shoes are too heavy or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, the ball striking is there. You can hit aces, but move those feet. Like, but yeah, I mean, if we just go, I guess now we're getting to the last section. And I find this section quite interesting with Ons Jabeur, obviously, having made those two major finals back to back, but also just her in general coming into this tournament. She didn't play this event last year. So, quite a really good opportunity for her to pick up points. Obviously, I mean, no one really has a bad thing to say about Jabeur just as a person and just, you know, the what she represents in tennis and all of that. And, you know, would just love a deep run from her. But I mean, and I do like her draw somewhat, but then she's got some tricky opponents. Like Vondrousova is just so not easy. I mean, with her, with the way she's been playing lately, and also just, you know, I think she's found some really good form having played in December and getting a lot of match wins. I mean, troubled Sabalenka for a little bit in her title run as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she tends to do well in, I think she did well last year as well. So I think
she actually lost to Sabalenka in a pretty topsy-turvy three set match.
Oh yeah. Was that the one where Sabalenka like joked?
It's like only yeah. 10 double faults. Yes.
Yeah. That was the one. I think she came back from a set down to win that one. But
yeah.
And then you also have Kanepi in there, and Kanepi being seated instead of.
I know, right?
So, spare a thought
for Venus Williams, too, because Venus Williams would have gotten Kanepi in the first round. I'm kind of glad we dodged that bullet, but I do want her to be healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. But my goodness. I mean, also, you do have Stephens in that section. You have Haddad, Maya. I don't really know what Stephens is doing these days, to be honest. First two matches of the year were a little ugly. I guess that loss to Makarova aged kind of well, but.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
The one thing I can say about Sloane Stephens that gives me a glimmer of hope, like I'm not necessarily picking her to do anything spectacular at this tournament, although this is the 10-year anniversary of when she made the semifinals, which is another crazy fact that I've been like in this tennis world for a solid almost 2 decades. Like it seems like just yesterday she made that semi. But anyway, she teamed up recently with Rafa Nadal's ex-coach,
Francisco Roig. Yeah.
Francisco Roig. For me, when a coach has been around the level that Nadal exerts and like his ability to kind of be a top player and maintain that, it doesn't make sense realistically for him to go to somebody who he doesn't believe has any better tennis in them. You know, like to me, that seems that there must have been some kind of conversation or some showing of effort, which is something that Sloane Stephens kind of struggles with, at least from a television perspective. It kind of seems hard to believe that she's fully engaged in some matches, but that might just be a personality thing, right? But something tells me that she's in that, and I've used this analogy prior, she's in this kind of sector of her career where she's tinkering with things. Like she just changed her racket, the new coach, stuff like that. And I believe people have said they've noticed some kind of technical changes on her forehand. When you do stuff like that, I do believe you don't necessarily see like the fruits of your labor automatically, especially with tennis when you have to be in a groove or something like that. So hopefully this is her kind of retooling some things for a really good push. I'd love to see that. That's me being super optimistic and hopeful, but all of that to say is I don't necessarily see it benefiting her in this tournament, but just a spare thought for Sloane Stephens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we can still see it down the road as well, you know, rolling.
Yeah, games. Right.
I mean, that's where she really tends to shine even when she's not playing her best. So I look at her there, and I think she could put up a really good performance on the clay.
Her tennis has been beautiful there for sure. But in terms of, did we talk about the section prior?
No, we didn't. I was actually just going to say we completed that section. That's my bad, actually. But it's just scrolled a little too far down. But I mean, if you have Sabalenka and Bencic in that section, you have some interesting first rounds. Muguruza and Mertens is quite an eye-catching one. I mean, you got Georgie and Pavlyuchenkova. Good to see Pavlyuchenkova back. You got some Americans in there. Lauren Davis just won a title this week.
Mm-hmm.
Rogers as well. Rogers is always a dangerous second, third round match with these top seeds. But you know what? I'm really tempted to think that Aryna Sabalenka's, this is going to be a really big opportunity for her, just because, I mean, last week she usually has like 15 or 20 minute stretches where she just looks unstoppable, unbeatable. And then she has a 15 minutes where she just can't find the court. But last week I saw less of those 15 minutes where she couldn't find the court, and more of the times where it was just really out of her control. I remember even the Noskova final, I really thought, I was waiting for her to get tight at the end of that second set when Noskova raised her level, and she just stuck in there. And I think the reason why I put so much stock in that title and win is just because it had been so long since she'd won a title, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have to go all the way back to like 2021 Madrid when we saw her beat Barty, and they had somewhat of a really good rivalry that year as well. But, you know, I just look at her now and I just feel like there's a little bit of pressure lifted off of her shoulder in some way, because even though she hasn't got that slam, and we all know she has the game to do it, it's just, I feel like she's enjoying her tennis a lot more. She's fixed the serve biomechanically, fewer double faults just in general. That's the biggest thing. And it just looks like she's genuinely just enjoying playing the game and the process of it. So
I'm leaning in. I'm leaning into Team Sabalenka here, just because you got to think about the story arc. You know, like think about literally at Adelaide in 2022, how like anxious and sad and upset she was because she couldn't get a serve in the box. And then fast forward 2023, she wins that tournament. I dare say wins the Australian Open. I'm leaning into it as much as I ever have been. And I think she feels confident and secure in her tennis finally. Now, she's always going to be a little crazy out there. Like she says, she's always going to be feisty and fighting, but I think she's secure in the level of her game, because honestly, if you really look at it, there were certain chunks of 2022 where she probably played the worst tennis of her career, of her professional career. I think she would admit to that. And yet she still finished top 10 in the world, like comfortably. I think that juxtaposition of playing so badly, but still being able to really perform at the biggest moments, like defending your semifinal at the US Open, getting to the final WTA finals in Fort Worth. She kind of feels in a way like she's playing with house money. Like she's done the hard work. She's kind of been at her quote unquote lowest of the lowest and still persevered. And now she's, you know, looking forward to knocking some goals off of her list that have been there for a while. And I think she can do it. I'm looking at her to really make a big splash at this Australian Open. And I have her going through that section. I'm not even trying to pay too much attention to the names around her. That's because I'm leaning so far into Sabalenka here. Hope she doesn't make a fool out of me though.
I share a lot of those same sentiments, and I just feel like it really doesn't matter who she's across the net from. Like, I mean, we saw what she did to Swiatek even in the US Open semis. I mean, she was like 8 points away from winning that match. And like, and even the year before against Leila, it's like, she just comes so close. And it's hard for me to envision a world where she doesn't at least win one. Like, it's just, you know, and she's been on the tour for so many years now, and she's still only 24. It's like she's got, you know, such a good resume outside of the majors now, like 4 1000s, like, you know, one.
I think she's been to titles. Eight. I think she's been to 18, maybe 19, including the final in Adelaide that just happened. 19 career WTA finals since 2017. And she's not even 25 herself yet. Like that's really impressive. And she does have 3 semifinals to her credit in Grand Slams, but even with all those accolades, it feels like there is still an upper echelon that she can kind of reach. So I'm excited for her.
You know, and if she does play Jabeur in the quarterfinals, she has a very good record against her. And she beat her at Wimbledon, and she also beat her at the, well, you know, at the WTA finals. And I just think she has way too much power for Jabeur when she's playing well. So I just, you know, I look at that section, and you know who's another name that really intrigues me in the Jabeur section? Don't have Jabeur getting out of this section.
Me either, actually.
I really don't. And I don't know, this might surprise you, but I'm going to be a little bold. I'm going to go for Donna Vekic.
I knew you were going to say that. I felt it. I felt it. Yeah.
Because
I can see
because
it.
Because I watched her play last year in San Diego. Okay. And the thing is, like, I saw a different player. Like, I know she's been to, you know, I know she's made that US Open quarterfinal and she's made a few other deep runs. She was once a top 20 player, but something just about her mentality has just shifted a little bit. Like, she just has a little bit more belief. The serve is a little bit bigger. That forehand is a little bit more terminating now. And it just looks like, and I think she also pushed Iga for, she took a set off of Iga in that final. And she, the way she beat Danielle Collins that day was so impressive to me because there were so many rain delays in San Diego. It like never rains in San Diego. And that day, just, when I was going, it just had to. And it was just like, it was just so much start and stop. And I believe that she had to play both the semis and the final in the same day. And I was just like, I mean, she was outside the top 70. And it's like, now I'm seeing just a few more signs of where, and she hasn't done anything spectacular at all in these lead-in tournaments and, you know, hasn't really had any form whatsoever. But I just, you know, I like her section of the draw also because very winnable first round. Second round is against Samsonova, who's been a little like up and down, been a little bit shaky closing off some of these matches, you know, and obviously, you know, Samsonova is a, you know, has one of the best forehands and serves, and she's probably inevitably going to climb up in the rankings later this year. But, you know, I don't know. And also, I think she's getting a lot of help and consultation from Pam Shriver as well, who I had on this podcast. And she's a big believer in Vekic. And I don't think someone of Pam's status in the game would say something like that lightly if she didn't see it and believe it herself with her own eyes. So that also gives me a little bit of confidence as well, because, I mean, yeah, I think Pam has a good eye for these sort of things and she has a lot of good inside information. But yeah, I also look at like Haddad, Maya, players like that, but I don't have that much faith in Jabeur right now. And also just her fitness is a little shaky to me. So I'm going to go with Vekic and Sabalenka to get out of that section. And I'm picking Sabalenka into the semis.
I'm totally with the Vekic hype train. I think when I've watched her play, there's something special about the way she hits the ball. And throwback alert, she reminds me of one of my favorite players from the mid-2000s, Nicole Vidasova. And I've always kind of wanted, yeah, her last name starts with the V, Vekic Vidasova. They kind of remind me, both play with the Yannick's racket, and I've always kind of wanted Vekic to pick up where Vidasova left off, but I see Vekic getting through her first two rounds, but if she makes it to the Beatrice Haddad Maia third round, which I want to see, tricky. Yeah, it's going to be tricky. And I actually have, I don't know where this came from. Maybe sometimes I see players' names on a draw and they kind of like do like a little glow thing to me. this is what happened with Beatrice Haddad Maia. I'm picking her to get out of that section. I am. And I'm picking her to meet Sabalenka in the quarters. I'd like to see that.
Oh, that's you know, I like that pick. Obviously, Haddad Maia has been, you know, last year Canada, obviously, and then just the whole comeback and journey she's been on, obviously. But yeah, I think we're ready to sort of predict our semis and finals and winner.
This always gives me anxiety. I have no idea why. I'm always like, oh yeah, I'm going on record with who I'm picking to win this tournament.
Yeah, and to be fair, like this is one of those, this is like just predicting majors in general. I mean, predicting 2 weeks worth of tennis, it's just like,
it's hard.
Yeah, and also like I just like hats off to anyone who ever gets it right, just because it's like, you know, I mean, it's just fun being wrong in some of these matches as well. Like you just you know you love being surprised as much as you love being right. At least for me, anyway. I just, I mean, I'd love to go back and just be like, "See, I told you so." But I'd also love to go back and be like, "Damn, I was totally wrong."
Like the person who magically picked Rybakina to win Wimbledon last year. Like, who? Yeah. I'd love to talk to you. Like, how did you see that coming?
Exactly. But yeah, I think I have Iga and Pegula. So I went straight up chalk. Oh my goodness. No, I didn't just do this. No way. Do I really have Garcia Sabalenka? I mean, that is, oh.
In the semi? Chalk.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it. Their match at the WTA finals was really, really good. I think I'm going to do a Swiatek versus Krejcikova semi.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then who did I pick to get out of this section?
I mean, you had
never mind. I remember. You know, I think I'm going to go Garcia Sabalenka as well. Yeah, Garcia Sabalenka and then Krejcikova Swiatek.
Damn,
so oh man, it's a little bit. It's a little bit like, I don't know. It seems too good to be true on paper.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you're definitely right, but I also think
Wait, can I change my mind?
you can, yeah. Of course. I want you to actually. Yeah,
Wait, let me make sure that I can actually do this. Is this even possible? Oh no, it's not possible. I just made it up in my head. I was gonna have a well, yeah, sorry, take that back. Swiatek Keys semifinal.
okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at the draw and I'm like, it's confusing me, but I'm pretty sure that's possible based off the draw. Yeah, Swiatek Keys semifinal, with the other semifinal in the bottom half being Garcia and Sabalenka.
Very interesting. So you have Krejcikova getting to the quarters, and then you have Keys Krejcikova meeting again. Like, it's basically the rematch of last year
I
in the
think Keys can
quarters.
do it again. Yeah, something about her. I mean, I have a feeling people are going to make me eat my words this tournament, but I just have a feeling. I have a feeling. I have a
Yeah.
feeling that the courts are playing slicker, that the people who take the biggest cuts, and you might litter up the stat sheet a little bit, but the people that are really being the dictators out there are going to really benefit from this year's Australian Open.
Yeah, very much. That is interesting. Like, against Krejcikova, I really like that matchup for Keys, actually. With those big cuts, and I feel like she can just match Krejcikova from the baseline as well, and she really took her apart last year. And I think Krejcikova just, like, struggled in the heat as well, so that was part of it. Yeah, and Keys doesn't mind the heat at all. So this is another reason why this tournament is so good for her.
She's
We talked
surprisingly
about
like really fit. Like none of her time off court, or like she never seems super, maybe because it's the style of play that she likes, which is kind of like wham bam thank you ma'am, but she never seems too winded out there. All of her injuries have been like body function, like a wrist or a shoulder or something like that. Nothing to do with her, stamina or anything revolving around that.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, so I'm picking Pegula over Keys. Not quite ready to go Super Boulder and Krejcikova just yet, although I will at probably some point this year. I'm going with Pegula Swiatek. I just think Swiatek will do her homework a lot better, be more prepared. She's been in these situations many times already, made like five or six semis already, and this is the only one missing in terms of a final. And I just think it's going to be different conditions. She's more prepared, like I said, for these situations. And their overall head-to-head is 4-1, but I also think some of the reason why that match was so one-sided at the United Cup is obviously Swiatek having to travel, and then she wasn't really very used to those conditions, and it was just kind of a gut check for her. The emotions that she displayed after she lost that match, and I just think, and also for Pegula, this is also a big step, right? Getting to a semis for the first time. She's made quarterfinals of Australia twice now, 2021 and 2022. So I still just, especially also if that's earlier in the day, like if it's that's the first night match that's on, usually it's still not quite totally night, and there's still some lingering heat as well, and maybe some of the conditions and variables are in Iga's favor more. But I'm picking Iga and Sabalenka in the final.
I think I'm going to do Sabalenka Keys. I'm going big on both of them. I think Keys, if she gets to that semifinal with Swiatek, the last time they played, I'm pretty sure Keys won in Cincinnati. I
Yeah.
think that confidence goes a long way. We've seen some of the chinks in the armor of Swiatek. Madison should feel like, I mean, there's two sides of it. Like, she kind of could naturally feel some of the pressure. Like, oh, how many more opportunities do I have to kind of put myself in this Grand Slam winning predicament? Or like, I'm a top 10 player again, like from the depths of the lows that she had when she was like outside the top 70 or close to it, I'm back in the top 10. I should be swinging freely again, and I know what it feels like to be here. So let me use some of my experience. So I hope that she leads or leans towards that side of it, and we get a Keys Sabalenka final. I feel like the Dunlop balls would like
Yeah,
that.
absolutely. And I think it's really going to benefit the bigger hitters who take big cuts and also serve big, and also the daytime conditions are really going to reward the top spin as well. So this is in some that's why I really like the Melbourne courts in general. I think it used to be like US Open was slow for a while, and Australian Open was fast, and now it's just they're kind of both medium to fast now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a good surface, and at the same time, it's not like the ATP Finals in Turin where you just can't break serve at all.
That was so, lightning fast. I like it though. I do like it.
Yeah,
end of the year, you know,
for sure. But yeah, and then
how did I get here to Keith Sabalenka final?
Yeah, I mean, I think you had Garcia, so you're going with Sabalenka beating Garcia in the
Garcia in the semis. Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be a revenge from the WTA Finals final,
which I think Sabalenka is all about. Yep.
Yeah, for sure. And that was such a good final, actually. I mean, it was
very good.
Yeah, that was very good quality and could have gone either way. It was just came down to a couple of double faults in the tiebreak. But yeah, and I have the same thing, but just with Iga Sabalenka. And I actually am going to lean the other way this time. I know Iga is like phenomenal in finals. I know she's never lost. She's lost 40 games and 10 finals before
Wow.
The Ostrava match against Krejcikova. But I just feel like, I mean, the margins have to shift in Arena's way at some point, right? And in a really, really big match. And when she finds that gear, like she did in that third set of the WTA final, or even in the first six games of that third set of the US Open match, I just think she's going to conquer her demons and just hit right through them the way she's been playing. And, you know, Iga, we've seen a little bit of more fragility sometimes now in finals. I mean, it's just one final and one semi and, you know, the Pagula match, but I just think there's a little something there still, that there's a little chink there. Sometimes her forehand can get a little tight, can get rushed with pace, and Sabalenka has the belief and the game to do it. So I'm thinking, if it's not now for Arena, which is a crazy thing to say because it's like she's 24, she's gonna have more bites at the apple, plenty more, but
I
just
hope so. I think she will.
Yeah, and I feel like it'll be now. I'll go with it. I'm picking
something about a gut feeling, right? We're leaning into the Sabalenka train.
Yeah, I think so.
If it feels right, I mean, I can't say it feels wrong. If it feels like Sabalenka has done the work to kind of get rid of some of those demons, and now it's just a matter of doing what she can do on court, controlling what she can control, and utilizing her game. Because, like, if you mention some of the best players on tour, if you like, I guess, poll the WTA, a lot of people are going to say Sabalenka is one of the best players that are currently active. Like, when she plays her best tennis, there's not many girls that can even hang with her, you know? So
are you going
cheers
with
to
the same, I
Sabalenka.
guess?
Yeah. I'm picking Sabalenka to win over Keys. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the odds, and many people have Pegula and Sabalenka, like, in some order, they're two or three. Like, it's, you know, it's pretty interchangeable. And Garcia, obviously, we just don't have enough of those big semifinals yet on her resume. But she's another one, like, it's her, Jabeur, and Sabalenka, and to a certain lesser extent, Sakkari, where it's like, those are some of the best players now to not have won a major. But, and I guess
personally,
he's in Pliskova, but.
Yeah, personally, I want to see Sakkari, like, really be the Greek warrior goddess that she is, but don't know if it'll happen this time. And I think I like her chances better on clay anyway, so.
Yeah, so I think we're riding the Team Sabalenka wave here.
We are. We definitely are.
We're sticking with it. But it was really fun doing this preview. And actually, before I let you go, I want to get some of your thoughts on the Breakpoint Netflix series. If you've managed to see any of it, or just read some of the recaps, or read what people are saying, what are your kind of, even though it's not really meant for us sort of diehard followers anyway.
I mean, I can totally dumb myself. I mean, that's kind of what Netflix is about, dumbing yourself down for like an hour or two and just getting pure entertainment. Like, I shouldn't have to think that hard in the middle of a Netflix series. So I think they're going to conquer that bit of it, because sometimes I do feel like the casual fan that even wants to tiptoe into tennis, once you realize that there's so many rules and so many, like, just scoring in tennis can be a headache. So hopefully they've managed to kind of ease some of that pain that non-tennis fans feel when they try to understand the sport. I will say I haven't watched any of the episodes yet. It just released, but I am a little disappointed in the higher ranked media correspondents and journalists and stuff like that who were privileged enough to get early access to it. And a lot of their reviews have not been, they've been either, they have a tone of being like overly sour or completely missing the point of what I think the producers of the show are trying to get. And again, I kind of say that with a grain of salt because I haven't watched it yet. But the vibe is that they're just trying to highlight something that hasn't been highlighted for a while, and try to usher in a new lens and scope on something that feels a little bit dated. We love tennis. You and I, we're diehards, but a lot of other people feel like tennis is super dated. Why would I want to enjoy that? And it needs a little bit of a jolt in it. And to see the people that are super influential in our sport and journalists and media kind of be like, oh, it's boring, or they missed the point completely, or why did they do this? It's like, like, I understand, like, that is clickbait too, you know, but I wish it would have been more positive, because if you pour positivity into it, even if you kind of have to fake the funk a little bit, that ultimately makes the sport grow. And I feel like the sport is in such a state of, I don't think the sport's going to die, right? I don't think it's going to like just stop existing, but I do think it's in a critical spot. Like, in the next 20 years, who are we going to look at as the faces of the sport, as we've had people that have been the face of the sport for the past 20 years that are slowly but surely phasing out? And I think tennis needs to be reintroduced to that. So I really want to, if it's not this series, hopefully it's the next, or if it's something down the line, I really want something to kind of breathe new life into the sport. And hopefully this is it, because I mean, Netflix is a huge platform. I mean, the show is going to be able to be accessed, I think, internationally in a lot of different countries, and hopefully that bodes well for international sport. So I'm looking forward to watching it. And even if it, you know, like I said before, I'll land my plane here, but even if it is something where I'm like, this isn't accurate, or this isn't like a good representation of the sport I'm so tuned into, no pun intended, I can wave it. Like, you know, it's entertainment, and that's what tennis needs more of. Not Nick Kyrgios entertainment, but entertainment nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean that's a healthy perspective, I guess, to have, because I mean, there is going to be hyperbole, there is going to be exaggeration. They're trying to get a broader point across to a wide range of audiences, who some of them have, you know, they never watch, they've not had a single introduction to the sport. They,
right,
they hardly know anything about it, except they might have heard of Serena Williams, they might have heard of Roger Federer, and that's not really the point. I mean, I saw a lot of comments of people being like, oh, they didn't mention Nadal, they didn't do this about Novak and all them. Like, that's not really the point of the series, right?
Right.
So I think it's more, and then also I think I'm giving them a little bit of a free pass, just because like the first few episodes, like, I mean, yes, they missed like huge chunks of the year, and like maybe they could have gone with like a different moments, but with like the cast of characters that they had, mm-hmm. it's like a pretty diverse mix, right? And then mm-hmm. also like they're not being like, for the producers who are like the cameras and everyone following this, like, they're probably just as new to tennis as some of the people watching it. And this is like such a hard game to like, you know, like cover, in terms of like just explaining like what is even the difference between like a major, yep, and a,
a 1000, like, what does that mean? Like, yeah, yeah. Like,
you know, what are these ranking points? Like, you know, what are they really playing for? Like, what is this?
Why should I care? Like, what are, yeah, all these, like, moving parts leading up to?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, why should we care about a certain player, a certain narrative? And whilst explaining the scoring system, like, it just feels like it's a very difficult sport, even compared to like F1,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it's still much more, there's a lot more easier access as well to players. I feel like players, even though as much as they want like behind the scenes access, there's still just like certain things like they just won't permit, you know, when they're in the tournament setting, and when they're just so self-centered and so self-focused, like they have to be. There's only so much content you can really rein out of them. I don't think they have actually as much access as, you know, as some of us think. Like, and it's hard to kind of get these episodes within 45 minutes as well. Unless,
right, exactly. There are certain time constraints, but I will say I have to give credit to the stakeholders and like the bigger tournaments, the Grand Slams. Yeah. And I don't often give them too much credit, but I do appreciate that it seems like they're also on one accord with publicizing this. Like, yeah, every Grand Slam Instagram and social media handle has been posting the trailers, really publicizing that they want this to kind of be seen to the masses. And even certain tournaments, like I think I saw the Monte Carlo Rolex Paris Masters post the trailer and like really pub it. Like, you know, yeah, like that's not a tournament to the average viewer or to the average casual fan of tennis. Like, you may know what that is, you may absolutely not, but to see really large people in the sport and tournaments in the sport really push and kind of be one cohesive unit of publicizing this, and this series is good to see, I think so.
Yeah. And, I hope we see some continuity in the cast of characters as well. So it really kind of builds on what we've seen now, as well as obviously, it'll be good to have, like Svantek, I think, is in the second half, and a few other names who are missing. And then you just kind of continue that narrative, and maybe hopefully they, the goal is that it lasts for like 4 seasons, 5 seasons.
Right, yeah, and has a truthful impact, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we'll really know its impact. I think, maybe in the US, maybe I'll find out when I'm looking at Indian Wells tickets and I see, these sales are going way through the roof.
Gosh, you would think the sales, I mean, I don't know. The sales should probably go down if they're selling more, but that we live in a capitalist society, so that's not fair.
And then, and also when the second series is released, maybe right before Wimbledon, what kind of impact that has. So it's all going to be, fascinating. I think I'm taking a step back from the whole, like, looking at it from our vantage point and just trying to just be like welcoming of it and just give it a chance, because I think there's some good there. So, but anyway, this was definitely a good chance to have you on the podcast, and it was good to go through all the contenders, dark horses, predictions, overviews. I mean, where can we follow you, Miles, on social media, since you're pretty active?
Yeah, I'm probably too active. For anybody that has been listening to this, like, I can't stand that guy. But sorry if you can't. Anyway, I can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and TikTok, all under the same username, Tuned Into Tennis. My name is Miles David. You can type in Miles David or Tuned Into Tennis, and I should pop up somewhere along those lines. You can probably find me on your refreshed feed once you refresh it or something like that. But yeah, I'm working towards getting some more content out and definitely giving my own colorful, passionate commentary to the sport, and hopefully taking this show on the road one day and impacting some actual ATP and WTA tournaments with my voice. So yeah, it's been fun. I love listening to you, and like I said before, I like interacting with all of the knowledge that you bring to the sport. I don't feel like I'm talking to somebody that has no clue what they're talking about and just kind of wants to benefit from the sport, but you actually care, and that's wonderful to see.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate your time, and I appreciate all the interactions. And obviously, it's as many people as that we can have in this community, sort of bridging that gap between, TV commentators and casual fans. I think that's great. I think that's what the sport needs. It needs some more insight, some more, information, narrative wise, statistically wise. I think, there's so many different niches you can go into than this broad game, and that's played 47 weeks throughout the whole year. So why not take advantage of it as much as you can? And I think these podcasts, these type of shows, are a great way to do that. But with that being said, I'll let you go, Miles. It was great having you on. We'll definitely do this again at some other point.
I'm all for it. Thanks.
Yep. Cheers. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.